upholding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captain of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. Were included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. And greetings from Technocracy News and Trends. Patrick Wood here, Editor-in-Chief. And today we have three great examples of how technocracy works in the world. And I hope this is going to be very instructive for everyone today. The first story is relatively minor, but it does make a good point about who's really in control of the purse strings in Washington, D.C. The title on this story is FCC Allocates $9 Billion for Rural 5G Rollout. I wrote at the top of this, in a massive handout, technocrat lobbyists and those within the FCC are orchestrating payment of taxpayer funds to wireless carriers to install 5G into rural areas. One application is for, quote, precision agriculture, close quote. Now, the big question here is, does the federal government have any business giving taxpayer funds to major telecom companies to put 5G towers into rural areas for the sake of applications like precision agriculture? This is their business. Should not it be their business and their money to install and implement this technology wherever they want it to be? Well, it looks like the taxpayers are going to be on the hook for this. Meanwhile, these companies are making billions and billions of dollars off of the 5G rollout, and that's just barely getting started. Just wait until the system gets totally in place and they begin to harvest all of the data from this system. There will be trillions made in the end. And the FCC has decided in its own singular wisdom that it should be the one that doles out $8 billion to put this technology into rural areas around the nation. The article states, Federal Communications Commission, FCC Chairman, Ajit Pai announced plans for a $9 billion fund to help carriers deploy 5G wireless service in rural America, which will replace an existing program that supported 4G LTE networks. The 5G fund will be distributed through a reverse auction and will target areas with difficult terrain or sparse populations. The FCC will set aside at least $1 billion for projects facilitating precision agriculture. According to a report released by the FCC this week, the previous Mobility Fund Phase 2 was marred by inaccurate data provided by carriers. Based on speed tests conducted over nearly 10,000 miles of driving, FCC staff determined that, quote, coverage maps submitted by certain carriers likely overstated each provider's actual coverage and did not reflect on-the-ground experience in many instances. In other words, for the 4G rollout to rural areas, money for which was also provided by the federal government, taxpayer money, in other words, that they took the money and didn't do what they said they were going to do. Well, that sounds familiar, doesn't it? That's just outright corruption. And why would anybody think that the telecoms are going to act any differently now with 5G? Well, the article continues, telecoms have charged ahead to deploy 5G in urban areas. Of course, that's where the profit is. That's where the density is. Since the spring, with limited launches in downtown neighborhoods. But rural areas have lagged behind because 5G requires installation of small cells to broadcast heavy data. It's a challenge to install the necessary infrastructure in sparsely populated areas. Despite promises from telecoms that they will target rural areas, Sprint and T-Mobile have made that pledge a key part of their proposed merger. Deployment is likely far off. The federal funding, however, will offer a major incentive and help companies get over the high upfront cost of installing infrastructure. Federal funding from the FCC, the Agriculture Department, and other agencies has helped improve rural broadband access. This is a scandal in the making, in my opinion, but it shows that the technocrats that are at the top of this whole implementation of 5G are easily getting their way to spread this technology everywhere. No person left behind. No area left behind. That's part and parcel of the technocracy mantra. Everybody has to be in the system in order to play ball. And so the telecom industries decided it was just too much for them to spend all that money to wrap in the rural areas. Let's go get some money from the federal government. They're suckers. We'll get $9 billion from them, and we'll install all this stuff, maybe, and then we'll get all the money from it down the road when we start charging fees for services. The second story is a serious story by John Whitehead, the president and founder of Rutherford Institute. The title of this is Patriot Act, Normalizing the U.S. Government's Mass Surveillance Powers. And again, this shows you where the technocrats are hiding in government and what they're up to. I wrote at the top of this, the Patriot Act was a watershed for technocrats as it has enabled total surveillance. It has changed the entire law enforcement culture and practice in America. Moreover, this happened right under America's nose because everyone was so focused on infighting between Democrats and Republicans instead of watching the ongoing backroom collusion between the two parties and others to drive the Constitution into the ground. And this is exactly what has happened. John Whitehead is a constitutional attorney. He's been around for many years. He's written some incredible books over the years, and his insight is always valuable. He writes, "While Congress subjects the nations to its impeachment-flavored brand of bread and circus politics, our civil liberties continue to die a slow, painful death by a thousand cuts." Case in point, while Americans have been fixated on the carefully orchestrated impeachment drama that continues to monopolize headlines, Congress passed and President Trump signed into law legislation extending three key provisions of the USA Patriot Act, which had been set to expire on December 15, 2019. Once again, to no one's surprise, the bureaucrats on both sides of the aisle, Democrats and Republicans alike, prioritized political grandstanding over principle and their oath of office to protect and defend the Constitution. And I would remind you that every senator and every congressman that takes a seat in Washington, D.C. does take the oath to protect and defend the Constitution. Do they follow their oath consistently? Absolutely not. The article continues, as Congressman Thomas Massey, Republican of Kentucky, predicted, quote, "Today, while everyone is distracted by the impeachment drama, Congress will vote to extend warrantless data collection provisions of the Patriot Act by hiding this language on page 25 of the continuing resolution that temporarily funds the government. To sneak this through, Congress will first vote to suspend the rule, which otherwise gives us and the people 72 hours to consider a bill. The scam here is that the Democrats are alleging abuse of presidential power while simultaneously reauthorizing warrantless power to spy on Americans that no president should have in a bill that continues to fund everything the president does and waiving their own rules to do it. I predict Democrats will vote on a party line to suspend the 72-hour rule, and after the rule is suspended, I suspect many Republicans will join most Democrats to pass the CR with the Patriot Act extension embedded in it." Well, Massey was right. Republicans and Democrats have no problem joining forces in order to maintain their joint stranglehold on power. The legislation passed at the Senate with a bipartisan 74-20 vote. It squeaked through the House of Representatives with a 231-192 margin. And it was signed by President Trump, who earlier this year floated the idea of making the government's surveillance powers permanent, with nary a protest from anyone about its impact on the rights of the American people. Spending bill or not, it didn't have to shake down this way, even with the threat of yet another government shutdown looming. Congress could have voted to separate the Patriot Act extension from the funding bill, as suggested by Representative Justin Amash, But that didn't fly. Instead, as journalist Norman Solomon writes for Salon, the cave-in was another bow to normalizing the U.S. government's mass surveillance powers. That right there is the key to all of this. Quote, normalizing the U.S. government's mass surveillance powers. In the 18 years since the USA Patriot Act, a massive 342-page wish list of expanded powers for the FBI and the CIA was rammed through Congress in the wake of the so-called 9/11 terror attacks, it has snowballed into the eradication of every vital safeguard against government overreach, corruption, and abuse. The Patriot Act drove a stake through the heart of the Bill of Rights, violating at least 6 of the 10 original amendments, the 1st, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th Amendments, and possibly the 13th and 14th Amendments as well. And I would remind you, by the way, that the author of this article is an esteemed constitutional attorney with well over 40 years of experience. The article continues, the Patriot Act also redefined terrorism so broadly that many non-terrorist political activities, such as protest marches, demonstrations, and civil disobedience, are now considered potential terrorist acts, thereby rendering anyone desiring to engage in protected First Amendment expressive activities as suspects of the surveillance state. The Patriot Act justified broader domestic surveillance, the logic being that if government agents knew more about each American, they could distinguish the terrorist from law-abiding citizens, no doubt a reflexive impulse shared by small-town police and federal agents alike. This, according to Washington Post reporter Robert O'Hara, was a fantasy that had been brewing in law enforcement world for a long time, and 9/11 provided the government with perfect excuse for conducting far-reaching surveillance and collecting mountains of information on even the most law-abiding citizens. Federal agents and police officers are now authorized to conduct covert black bag sneak and peek searches of homes and offices while you are far away and confiscate your personal property without first notifying you of their intent or their presence. The law also granted the FBI the right to come to your place of employment, demand your personal records, and question your supervisors and fellow employees, all without notifying you. It also allowed the government to access your medical records, school records, and practically every personal record about you, and allowed the government to secretly demand to see records of books or magazines you've checked out in any public library and internet sites you visited. At least 545 libraries received such demands in the first year following the passage of the Patriot Act. In the name of fighting terrorism, government officials are now permitted to monitor religious and political institutions with no suspicion of criminal wrongdoing. In addition, they can prosecute librarians or keepers of any other records if they tell anyone that the government has subpoenaed information related to a terror investigation, monitor conversation between attorneys and clients, search and seize Americans' papers and effects without showing probable cause, and jail Americans indefinitely without a trial, among other things. The federal government has also made liberal use of its new powers, especially through the use and abuse of the nefarious national security letters, which allow the FBI to demand personal customer records from internet service providers, financial institutions, and credit companies at the mere say-so of the government agent in charge of the local FBI office and without prior court approval. In fact, since 9/11, we've been spied on by surveillance cameras, eavesdropped on by government agents, had our belongings searched, our phones tapped, our mail opened, our email monitored, our opinions questioned, our purchases scrutinized under the USA Patriot Act. Banks are required to analyze your transactions for any patterns that raise suspicion and to see if you are connected to any objectionable people, and our activities watched. We're also being subjected to invasive pat-downs and whole-body scans of our persons and seizures of our electronic devices at the nation's airports. We can't even purchase certain cold medicines at the pharmacy anymore without it being reported to the government and our names being placed on a watch list. Well, this indeed is a key article for you to read. This is one of those you want to print and tuck it away in a safe place, because one day if this article disappears from the internet, you'll at least have a hard copy of it that you can share with people and say, see, this is what happened. This is where it started. I'll also mention that John Whitehead's book is still available on his website at the Rutherford Institute. The name of the book is Battlefield America, The War on the American People. And as a reference book, it's well worth your time to get a copy and hang on to it. The last story has significant meaning to me personally. It concerns the beautiful country of Zimbabwe, well, or at least what's left of Zimbabwe. The title of the story is China is Using Zimbabwe to Perfect Facial Recognition. You say, China? In Zimbabwe? Africa? That's right. This is the former British colony of Rhodesia, long considered to be the gem of southern Africa, a beautiful place that I personally have been to and visited quite extensively just after Great Britain granted independence back to the country. This is in the late 1970s. I wrote at the top of this article, in the late 1970s, the murderous rampage of Marxist rebels virtually destroyed the gem of southern Africa. The vacuum was filled by a brutal dictator, and now China's technocracy is firmly establishing itself. And I'll give you a little personal insight of my involvement with Rhodesia at that time. I was visiting South Africa and scheduled a trip up to Rhodesia to assess the terrorist activities up there that were taking place. They had not yet taken over the country, but they were trying to, and there was forces of a gunman supplied by weapons that came from the Soviet Union on innocent citizens all around the country. It was a terror operation to the max. The people in Rhodesia were some of the nicest people I ever met in my life. I walked down the street of the state capital at 10 o'clock at night. I was surprised to see that there were all kinds of people on the street at that time of night, white people, black people, even single women, walking down the street and able to actually interact and talk to people. For instance, when they stopped at a stoplight to walk across the street, there was no danger. There was no animosity. There was no hatred. There was no walls built between blacks and whites. And I was absolutely amazed, having, of course, come from America, where the racial divide is made such a big deal. I found none of that in pre-revolutionary Rhodesia, but the terrorists were on the move. And they were intent on taking the country apart piece by piece, bullet by bullet, murder by murder. I had scheduled a trip to the beautiful Victoria Falls, one of the seven wonders of the world, where there's a beautiful resort that people can stay at as they take tours of the area and even aircraft tours of the falls themselves. It's an absolutely beautiful area. And as we made it by plane to Victoria Falls and landed, we were immediately informed that the resort had been attacked by terrorists. They had chased off well over half the staff in the process. When we got there, we saw bullet holes sprayed all over the hotel's front, the front door. The plaster was knocked off the walls in many places. Windows were broken. The dead bodies had been removed by the time we got there. But the remaining employees of the hotel were absolutely nervous and scared to death. They'd never seen anything like this before in their life. And they didn't know what the future held for them at that point, for sure. The police assured us that the entire facility was secured at that point and it was safe to stay there, and we did. But in the process of staying there, we got to talk with many of the police/military personnel that were assigned to the area to make sure there was no more attacks. And they told us some stories that were absolutely horrific. My comments at the top of this article continue. Zimbabwe, formerly Rhodesia, is a perfect example of what Zbigniew Brzezinski meant when he said that Marxism is a necessary stepping stone to the final order of things, which he termed the technotronic era. Rhodesia was originally a colony of Britain and highly civilized, prosperous, and beautiful. When Britain granted independence, Marxist rebels tore the nations to shreds by purging educated citizens and driving white farmers off their properties. After decades of living under a brutal and ignorant dictator, Robert Mugabe, China has now moved in and is rubber stamping technocracy on that country. Thus, Marxism destroys existing governments, paving the way for technocratic scientific dictatorship. This is also the globalist plan for America, and I hope you get the point. Marxism is not the end, but only the means to an even worse end, that is, technocracy. Now listen to this story. As China spreads its economic footprints across multiple continents with the Belt and Road Initiative and exercises more and more control over the lives of its subjects via a combination of its social credit score system and vast surveillance state, it appears Beijing's big brother has run into an issue that needs to be addressed to achieve world domination, namely inaccuracy. Facial recognition systems are becoming more and more mainstream and accepted by an increasing number of average Joes around the world as the cost of security or just ease of life. The problem is, as we detailed previously, some segments of society, it is wildly inaccurate. Specifically, after Oakland and San Francisco voted against the use of facial recognition, Representative Tashida Tlaib claimed that, quote, "The error rate among African Americans, especially women, was 60%. During a test run by the ACLU of Northern California, facial recognition misidentified 26 members of the California legislature as people in a database of arrest photos. Some tech firms have tried to fix this extremely high-level inaccuracy for certain cohorts by tricking black people into being scanned. But China's tech behemoths have taken the process of training their algos on non-white faces to a whole new level. As the Financial Times reports, a deal between Chinese facial recognition company CloudWalk and the government of Zimbabwe means the latter will send data on millions of African faces to the Chinese company to help train the technology. Quote, "African states tend to go along with what is being put forward by China and the ITU as they don't have the resources to develop standards themselves," said Richard Wingfield, head of legal at Global Partners Digital, a company working on human rights for the internet. A side comment here, China has a very, very small black population. They really have no interest themselves for the sake of their own country to perfect facial recognition on black or people of any other color than Asian, but it does intend to use this technology in countries in Africa, so it figures it better get its act together and learn how to recognize and deal with facial scanning in black populations. The article continues, "Perhaps somewhat shockingly, the Financial Times reports over the last few years, Chinese surveillance infrastructure has swept across regions from Angola to Zimbabwe. For example, earlier this year, South African company Vumacam installed 15,000 surveillance cameras with facial recognition capabilities in Johannesburg alone, supplied by Hikvision. In August, Uganda confirmed the nationwide installation of Huawei surveillance cameras with face recognition capabilities. Similarly, the Singapore government plans to install facial recognition cameras on its lamppost, a contract with that Chinese startup, Yitu, has bid for, according to local reports. As Foreign Policy magazine previously noted, this agreement will also enable Zimbabwe, a country with a bleak record on human rights, and bleak is an understatement, by the way, to replicate parts of the surveillance infrastructure that have made freedom so limited in China. And by gaining access to a population with a racial mix far different than China's, CloudWalk will be better able to train racial biases out of its facial recognition systems, a problem that has beleaguered facial recognition companies around the world and which could give China a vital edge. Quote, "People did not consent to the use of their biometric data in this way," Hove said. "Unfortunately, people do not have any way of holding the government accountable as there are no laws in place or any regulatory body tasked with the protection of people's privacy or data protection. Zimbabwe's 2002 Access to Information and Protection of Privacy Act doesn't cover biometric data or cross-border flows of data. And as Hove notes, the government has rarely even acted in the people's interest." The CloudWalk deal is built on the back of a long-standing relationship between former Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe's regime, seen by China as an ideological ally, and Beijing. Again, to make my point, Marxism was not the end of societal evolution in Zimbabwe. It was only the means to tear the country to shreds, break it down to the very baseness of humanity, and then build it back up in the end with technocracy. This is exactly what's happened. In the vacuum of the original surge of terrorism, the scared investment away from Zimbabwe originally, it created a vacuum into which the brutal dictator Robert Mugabe walked, and he ruled the country ruthlessly for decades. During that time, he reduced Zimbabwe to a pauper nation. They were dependent almost every year on foreign aid to supply food. And this was a nation that used to supply food to Europe, to all of Africa. It was considered the breadbasket of the continent. It was one of the most beautiful nations in the world. And it was completely destroyed by Marxism first and then by a brutal dictatorship by a Marxist leader. And when he finally died recently, gave up his presidency, China comes waltzing in and finds that Zimbabwe is just ready for technocracy. They need an outside structure to make the nation work because they have completely destroyed everything that worked along the way. And I believe that's exactly why Zbigniew Brzezinski concluded in his book Between Two Ages, America's Role in the Technotronic Era, that Marxism was necessary. It was a necessary stepping stone to get to the final end of technocracy. Zimbabwe is a great model. This is also the same model that's being used here in America. Marxist organizations and communist organizations, whichever you want to call them, are working overtime to tear America apart. They haven't been successful yet, but I have to say, if enough Marxists ever rise up at the same time, they will indeed start a civil war. And that could end very poorly because there are a lot of guns in America in private hands. And they won't put up with it like they did in Zimbabwe. But I expect that the global elite understands that America can't fully be torn apart in the same way that Zimbabwe was, or any other of the southern African countries like Zimbabwe, like Mozambique, like Angola. Rather, in America, the only way to get liberty out of the picture here is to destroy our Constitution and our political institutions. And we can see that's exactly what's happening in modern times. Congress is completely ineffective at what they're doing right now. They're arguing and griping and complaining over all these side issues that have no substance whatsoever. And meanwhile, our country is just sinking into the sand. Well, it's still not too late for the people of America to do something, but I'll tell you, they need to wake up and smell the coffee because it's coming. And if we do not stand up, it will overrun us like a tidal wave. We're rapidly coming up on the deadline to order books for Christmas delivery. That is December 12th. If you have any mind whatsoever to order 1, 2, or 10, or 20 books to give away to people that you know, perhaps in local leadership positions, perhaps friends, neighbors, whatever, we will be out of the office starting on the 13th of the month. That means the 12th is the very last day that you can order products from technocracy.news. However, you can order single copies of the book and the Kindle version and the audiobook version on Amazon at any time. That is Amazon.com. And Amazon in several different countries also carry those products. I know for sure that the Amazon website in Australia, in Germany, in Great Britain, for instance, all carry all of my books on Technocracy, as well as the Kindle version and the audiobook as well. So I hope you take advantage of that and otherwise be thinking about the clear and present danger that we have with technocracy right now in our country, and try and look through the political circus that's going on in Washington, D.C. That's not where the action is right now. Technocrats are working overtime all around the periphery of that to take our country into total scientific dictatorship. And only we out here in America can stop it. I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. We'll see you next time.